Hello, everyone. Audio issues are still plaguing our podcast. You'll notice that the sound isn't great. This isn't the sound that we're accustomed to, so I apologize in advance. Warren Davis is on the program, though. He created Q-Bert. He's awesome. So stick around. Oh, and by the way, when you get to the end, like the last 3 minutes, I only have audio for Travis. So I just truncated all of what Travis said in like the last 10 minutes of the show into like 3 minutes of just Travis talking to himself. So enjoy.
The people demand we give them one. After a week of waiting, the time has come.
Travis, I'll give you a peek into some of the good criticism I get, like some of the real quality suggestions I get on how to improve the show. Earlier today, Travis, it was suggested to me that the way to improve the program is to replace you with my wife.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Replace Travis?
Well, he didn't say replace Travis. But he said, oh, well, you should do the show with your wife and drunk.
Travis. Forever.
The Dub Fod. My name is Mike. I am joined by my good friend, Mr. Drunkard STL.
Travis Forever.
And guys, via Skype, the king of pranks, the albino alligator, popcorn bitch, Mr. Travis Hulse, everyone.
Nope, sorry, this is Mike's wife.
Phone number to contact the show is 636-487-HAND or WFOD show on Skype. And guys, we have one hell of a program for you this evening. Coming up after the break, we are going to be talking to the great Warren Davis, Travis. Warren Davis, he's a video game man. He created Q-Bert, and he wrote a book about it. And Travis, I'll tell you. This book is crazy because now I think that I was just a little bit younger than the dawning of video games.
Just a hair ski.
But like how quickly they went from making Q-Bert, which I mean, to give you a reference that I guess we'd understand, it looked like a Nintendo game. Yeah. And like he made that and then immediately went to making like crazy video shit. I mean, like he worked on NBA Jam. He worked on Revolution X, the game with Aerosmith that you shot people.
Aerosmith shooter.
Terminator 2. He worked on Mortal Kombat. Yeah, the guy, he's got a fucking crazy resume, Travis. So, I'm looking forward to talking to him. Guys, speaking of technological innovations, somebody sent us a news briefing this past week. It was a kind of a sympathetic thing, Travis. It was talking about the people affected by Amazon naming their devices a people name. They should name it like a robot name, like a XR75 play my Spotify playlist, you know.
Why would they? But no.
I have a
well, to be fair, you can switch the name, right? My daughter's device, she awakens it by saying Echo.
I was about to say, you can only change it to like 4 or 5 different things.
Yeah, well, here we go.
I just want Amazon to know that he deserved to have his name honored, not to turn it into something belittling to the daughter he never got to hold. So I think they should name devices as devices, not as people. They could never carry the mantle of being a real person.
See, Jersey, this gal was named after her dad, who I think he was mugged and murdered. And his name was Alex.
See, I never heard the name Alexa before, like, the device. And then it turns out there's, like, a lot of Alexas out there.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, apparently. And their lives are all ruined.
Well, they could go by different names.
The gal was in the thing, and she said that she went to the dentist's office, and the dentist said to her, hey, I'm just going to call you Al, because I don't want to wake up my device. And she's like, I don't want to be called Al. Like, well,
how about turn the device off?
Call her Lexi.
It's the dentist. Like, you know, just don't call her anything. Just say, open your mouth, please.
Bitch.
Right.
Open your
mouth. Yeah, I don't know how often they actually say my name when I'm sitting in the chair and they're cleaning my teeth.
You don't need to say it at all. You just, you're just the guy, the mouth in the seat, Travis.
Yeah, I don't understand this. It's not like that. There haven't been inanimate objects named after people prior to these assistant devices. There's been, I'm sure there's been plenty of things over the years that have been named after people. Are we going after every single thing that has a people name?
I think that we should name more inanimate objects after people.
Agreed. I call my laptop Bruce.
Bob the car. Yeah. It got that name. I just got new tires, Travis, and they seem extra bouncy. So, like,
oh,
you know,
so that's why bad. It's Bob.
This guy's Bob. He's bouncing around a little bit. You know, I feel very buoyant. You know what I'm saying, drunk?
Buoyant, like you could drive through the Mississippi?
You do one of those things where your tires go sideways. And
totally.
Like a pontoon boat.
Yeah, gangster.
Be kind of cool.
Hell yeah.
Don't you feel like by now we should have pontoon boat cars, Travis?
I feel like people retrofit things to make them pontoons. I have seen party school buses, school buses that people have converted into like party buses that are like outfitted with like pontoons out on them. So you pull up to the water, you drop your pontoons, you secure them into place, and you just drive right into the water.
Do you drive onto it like a car wash? Like somebody eases you into the things and then you go in neutral?
No, the pontoons, like, once you get to it, like a boat landing, you would just drop the pontoons, like they're up like DeLorean doors. You close them so they're sitting lower than the chassis of the school bus. You secure them into place, you drive the wheels in there, and then you just float along at your leisure.
So it's kind of like landing gear? It's permanently on the vehicle?
Essentially.
Huh.
Don't they got, like, the duck boats, too?
I just thought those were tall.
Duck boats exist.
Yeah, it's like a car that drives in the water.
You know, the route that I take to work has been closed for like...
ever?
Months and months and months. And
I know that's my shortcut to get to your house after work.
I'm starting to think that there's something going on, Travis.
There is. I'll tell you about it afterwards.
Oh, is there something going on?
Yeah, there's a thing.
Is the government doing something? Drunk, tell me. Just tell me.
It's kind of, well, there's like a...
Give me the wink-wink version.
Part of it is there's a land dispute with an owner back there.
Oh. They say they own the road?
Well, they want to move the bridge a little bit, but that would be going onto man's property.
Do I have to pay this man a toll? Is that what you're saying? I'm going to have to give this guy a toll?
No, the man wants his land. He doesn't want them to build a bridge under his land.
So you're talking about the current bridge.
Well, I'm talking about like one of the little itty bitty, like.
Yeah. So they want to go around that?
Right, because the current bridge is failing. It doesn't pass inspection.
Oh.
And they can't build.
All our bridges are failing.
God damn it, Travis.
Remember when Obama did that State of the Union address and he said we had a bridge problem in this country, that all our bridges are falling apart, which was like the first time I heard about it?
The road over behind the Hucks, they just put a
that's another land
barrier up.
That's another landowner issue.
And they just said, yeah, this isn't a road anymore.
Yeah.
He can't even fucking drive past the Hucks.
No.
There's a light there that goes to nothing.
Yep. That's another landowner issue.
Fucking motherfuckers, Travis. The goddamn, how much does it cost to patch a road? You get some concrete. Some
disgusting bureaucracy.
You get a couple guys, go out there and you fix the fucking road, Travis.
But yeah,
they're city workers. You got to have at least six of them for a two-man job.
That route probably won't reopen again until 2023.
Oh my God. It makes going to work.
10 times
hassle.
Longer.
Yeah. I hate it.
You gotta go all the way down the big road.
I gotta go down the big road, drunk. Yep. And that's where everybody goes.
I know.
What we had is a few people who went the other way, yep. And that made it better for everybody.
Absolutely.
They fucked it all up.
They did.
Our friend Brandon from Shitty Song of the Week, he sent us an assisted suicide thing. You want to talk about that?
Okay.
I, you know what? I think he saw this story and he said, this looks like a
Dubfod
story. Okay. So they got these pods. They kind of look like escape pods on like a fancy spaceship.
Okay.
They're pretty cool looking. I'm trying to describe what they look. They look like little space shuttles.
Does it look like what you go into to go to the top of the arch?
No. Like it looks like a... Like somebody really cool designed these, like Tony Hawk made them. You know what they kind of...
Tony Hawk was a designer, but...
Well, me neither. I'm just trying to think of somebody who's cool, and that's the reference I came up with.
When Mike goes to his cool meter at the top of the pops...
Yeah, Tony Hawk, 50-year-old man.
You see him.
It's super cool.
Fucking Tony Hawk, he's cool, right?
Yeah.
Guys, I got a question for you. The WFID question of the week. Who's cool?
Who is cool?
Like, when you think cool, who comes to mind? Like, who is the cool guy?
Well, I got my...
Travis, do you remember that movie where Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence were going to space and they were supposed to sleep for like
movie.
1,000 years or
Passengers?
Something? Yeah, the things that they were in when they were supposed to sleep, it kind of looks like that. Only like it's painted cool colors, like a metallic purple and stuff.
Is there like a clear window on it?
Yes.
You said it was who and who?
It was Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence.
Isn't that one of those Jupiter movies?
I think they were going to a different planet to like repopulate. It was one of those we fucked up.
Yeah,
it's
like a whole colony, but then everybody dies except for them.
Yeah, like they fucked up the Earth and they had to go somewhere else.
Gotcha.
And then they were only two people, so they had to fuck.
Well.
Yeah, but then they hated each other because they were there for so long, and then they liked each other again. It's a whole thing.
Right.
It's a whole
pod. So anyway, these pods, you go in them.
You didn't even answer the question.
A 3D printed coffin-like pod developed to carry out assisted suicide may soon begin legally operating in Switzerland.
It's a Swiss invention. It looked way too big to be 3D. How big are these 3D printers now?
You can get industrial-sized 3D printers.
You'd have to.
Yeah.
I don't know why they specified 3D printed, because I mean, it's not like you can send me the schematics and I could make one in like my... at home 3D printer. I mean, it has to fit a person in it.
Yes, you just make it like pieces at a time and then assemble it.
Yeah, and then you got to get the death chemicals, Travis. It's a whole fucking thing.
The Swiss have plenty of industrial space.
Can you just pick up some death chemicals?
I don't remember. Is it let me play this other one. What was this?
When used, the pod will flood with nitrogen, reducing the interior oxygen level from 21 to 1%, making the user feel disoriented and slightly euphoric, not panicked, before losing consciousness and dying within half a minute.
I don't think in a half a minute you would have time to get euphoric.
Be euphoric?
You'd probably still be like, the thing closed, I guess I'm fucked. And then by then you'd be dead, right? Like, when is the euphoria? I think that you should have a couple minutes. 30 seconds, it's too fast.
Well, I mean, at least enough to be intoxicated right before you pass.
They just said in 30 seconds, you're dead. I think that 30 seconds would probably be devoted to, well, I guess this is it. I hope I feel euphoric soon. And then
yeah,
you're dead.
I would imagine that if you die within 30 seconds, there is time to be panicked.
Certainly we'll find the time, Travis. We'll find a way to get fucking panicked.
Well, I'm not panicking.
You know, you'll be just fine?
Yeah.
I guess if you're getting in that
thing. If you made that decision, you're fine.
What happens if you don't make the decision? And like they said that they can transport these to...
Well, I'm assuming this is mainly for euthanasia.
Yeah. You do it yourself, but they said that they can take it. Like if you want to like die in like a pretty field, they'll bring it to the pretty field for you.
Nice.
So these aren't one-time use items, right? They use them, they transport them to you. Then after you use it yourself, then they clean your body out, sanitize it, and then take it to the next place.
Sanitize.
Probably, yeah. So it'd probably be kind of gross. You get in that thing and there's been a whole, what they need is like a bottom trap door that opens up. And then just puts you right in the ground.
As soon as you're dead, you just fall through.
Yeah, that way nobody has to clean you up. They just put right above the hole.
Nope, incinerator.
Ooh. See, that's...
Well, that's, one or the other. Like, if you want to be buried, you can be buried. And they'll just put you, prop you right up over the hole that they dug. Otherwise, yeah, they drop you into the incinerator and then you're cremated. I like this trapdoor idea.
Yeah, I would... be too self-conscious, Travis. I would be worried, somebody's going to have to, like, clean me out of this thing. The whole time I'd be wondering who's going to be the poor fucking guy that's got to clean me out of this thing. Because I'm probably going to shit my pants, right?
Yeah, I think everybody does.
So, does it have nice seats in it that I'm going to ruin?
I feel like what they would probably do is have, like, those toilet seat cover things, like paper. So they just like set down like some sort of like dispenser. So every time somebody new comes in, the person like pulls out like the toilet seat cover, but it covers the whole seat. Then you sit down. So that way when you pass and somebody's got to take you out of there, they just pull the seat cover out with you and you're good to go.
But then you get in that thing and you see all the cover, and then all you're thinking about is what a mess you're going to make and how gross it is that you're doing all this.
I feel like probably at this point, if you're making the decision to die, you probably have some terminal illness or in a lot of pain. So you're probably not thinking about a lot of things other than being done with everything. I like this idea. I think it's been ridiculous that for so long we've, you know, allowed people to take their pets in and put them out of their misery at a vet clinic. But people are not able to make the decision, you know, when they have terminal illnesses, just like these animals, that they're not allowed the same respect to make that choice, and that it's illegal to help somebody take their own lives in those situations. Like, I'm not advocating suicide for suicide's sake, but I think that if somebody's in a lot of pain or has a terminal illness that is, you know, creating a lot of hardship, that people should be able to make the decision to end it.
They should jump in a volcano.
Why make the only alternatives to this putting a bullet in your head or taking a bunch of pills that usually doesn't work or jumping off something? Like, doesn't it just make more sense to be in like a place where they just deal with the aftermath of this? That should be part of medicine, right? Like, this person, the doctor said, you have a brain tumor. Obviously, you've been in a lot of pain. We can't get it out. There's nothing we can do. There's no radiation. There's no medication. You're just going to be in a fuckload of pain until you keel over dead. Shouldn't there be an alternative to that?
So do the pod. Give it a trap door so nobody has to clean you up.
The hardest that person has to work is to press a button to drop the trap door, and then they move it to the next place.
Yeah. And like there's just a like a box under it. That they just have to put like a plastic lid on it and do the little snappy handle things.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And don't take it to places. Just have it set up and then like have a box under it like they do at the oil change places.
That you just put the new box under after you're finished.
Right. There you go. We solved it, Travis. So they have the right idea. And I like that death coaster we talked about a while back, too. That sounded pretty cool. That'd be a way
to go. Into that.
But yeah, no, don't make somebody clean you up, because that'll just make people think about it a lot. And we don't want that. We want to just be done with it and then fall into a box. No muss, no fuss, right? So, guys, thanks for sending that to us, by the way, Brandon.
Yeah, I'm sure Warren's going to love being on this episode.
Now we're going to talk to the video game guy, Travis.
Gear up, buddy.
Dubfod goes hard.
I'm Qbert, and I've got all the right moves. I've got the legs, too. First an arcade game, now my own home video game. I'm ready for anything. Staying away from creeps like Ugg and Coily takes a quick mind and lots of fancy footwork. The longer I hop around, the more they're out to get me. Ugg!
Now for all popular systems.
Not easy being Qbert, but it's fun.
Nervous man of considerable wealth. You know Epstein didn't kill himself. You know Epstein didn't kill himself.
Hello, listener. There's things you need to know.
Online and on your mobile device.
This is Strange Label.
We have breaking news out of New York City, where it appears a feat even Jimmy Fallon himself couldn't facilitate. The Friends cast has reunited in Times Square. They appear... Is this correct? Can we get confirmation on this? They appear to be wired with explosives.
How you doing? How you doing? How you doing?
Ms. Kudrow, Chaz Charlton from Action 7 News, why are you doing this?
How you doing?
They tampered with the re-release Crystal Pepsi supply. It's making everyone go crazy for early 90s nostalgia. Or whatever convoluted plotline is necessary to sell this bullshit.
We'll never surrender. We'll never quit. Because we're too legit to quit. Nothing for you.
Reports coming out of Hartford, Connecticut indicate that the ALF epidemic has eradicated the city's cat population.
Now, this is a story all about how this town's about to get flipped upside down.
Oh, Icarus.
Bubble tape. It's 6 feet of bubble gum for you, not them.
What is that? What? Godzilla wasn't big in the 90s, what? Oh, no. No, they didn't. They couldn't. No! No! See? It's a giant...
Night, Michelle.
Everybody run! It's a giant Bob Saget!
A long silence ensues. Once again, WFOD. Wheelbarrow full of dicks.
Welcome back. Our guest tonight is an inductee into the International Video Game Hall of Fame, having had a hand in such games as NBA Jam, Terminator 2, Mortal Kombat, Revolution X, and many more. His new book is called Creating Q-Bert and Other Classic Video Arcade Games. It will be in bookstores December 21st. Warren Davis is on the program.
Hello.
Warren, I've been reading your book and enjoying it a lot. I haven't finished it yet because I think I've learned that I'm a slow reader, Warren.
nothing wrong with that.
I try to just knock it out, and I get involved in it, and then I find out that I don't finish things on a deadline very well. I am enjoying it quite a bit, though. I'm just getting to when you're starting to put stuff on laser discs. So don't spoil the end for me.
All right, I'll try not to give the end away, but and there's no quiz, so no worries.
So you were one of the few authors that didn't put a quiz at the end of your book.
I did not. If you'd like me to put one together for you when you're done, let me know. But
right, that sounds good.
Just to check my comprehension of the whole thing. So you wrote this book a while ago, didn't you? And you just self-published and took it with you to conventions and stuff. Is that
accurate? Yeah, that was the original plan. I did write it. It took me a couple of years, so I probably started writing it probably around 2017, and it took me a couple of years. It was ready to be printed and published in about 2019. And the first show I took it to was called Free Play Florida in 2019, November. That's a show in Orlando, and I actually brought my self-published books there, thinking that I would do this, going forward. And then, of course, the pandemic happened, and everything in 2020 got canceled. So I sat around for many months doing absolutely nothing in 2020, and I thought, since I'm not doing anything, maybe I should reach out to some publishers and just see if there's any interest. Lo and behold, I found a publisher who was interested, and we began a process that resulted in this book being re-released. Technically it's a different book, but honestly, it's pretty much the same book. There have been some slight edits and some rejiggering of images and things, but it's essentially the same book.
You said that you only have the one photo, which is on the cover of the entire time you were working on this game, which really is, I guess that's kind of what you're known for, is creating Q-Bert.
Yeah, that's the only picture that I am aware of from those days. The pictures that, listen, we didn't expect that any of what we were doing would have any sort of historical significance.
Right.
We were just having some fun and trying to come up with some entertaining games.
I guess now you'd probably have lots of them because you'd be posting it on Instagram and stuff, right? You probably have hundreds of
pictures. Oh, God.
And what you had for dinner every day.
Nowadays, everything is documented, exactly. But back then, even for the book, I was going back through all of my pictures, just trying to find anything that was related to my game career. It was difficult. Pretty much everything that I have is in the book. More or less. It's definitely not. It's literally not everything. But I wasn't one to, just document my life. And even when I did, I was usually taking the pictures. So there were very few pictures where I was the subject of the pictures.
Like mom, man. Mom's always the one taking the pictures, right, Travis? It's always mom.
I'm typically the one that's not in the pictures. My choice.
I mean, Travis, if my parents lived in Chicago when I was developing Q-Bert, I probably would have more pictures of myself. They live in New York.
Travis, I think that for a variety of reasons, what I'm reading about in Warren's book, it sounds like he was in the absolute best time to be in the business that he was in, to be a creator in that time period. Not only because you're figuring out to do things that have never been done before, but what I got a real kick out of when you guys were making Q-Bert, somebody suggested that you put a pinball knocker in the bottom of the cabinet so that when Qbert fell off the pyramid, it made a sound in the bottom of the cabinet that sounded like Qbert fell into the bottom of the cabinet. And that yeah. You guys were able to suggest that, and the manufacturer was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
It was, especially when I started, it was an amazing time because the department was very small and it was very loose. In fact, the main plant, Gottlieb was primarily a pinball manufacturer, and the main plant was in Northlake. But the two guys who ran the video department, Ron Waxman was the VP of engineering, and Howie Rubin was the VP of business development. And those two guys oversaw the entire video department, but they started it up in Bensonville at a separate location, about 8 or 9 miles from the main plant, and partially, you know, to protect us from the rest of the company, you know? So they had a little bit of free rein, and they could run things the way they wanted, and the way they wanted to run things was fairly loosely, you know, and give people a lot of freedom to create, to their credit. They really gave us the environment to play.
And did later on it become more cutthroat and I guess more working on deadlines and stuff? Did you ever get into home entertainment stuff, or did you stay in arcade games? Do they even have arcade games now?
They do have arcade games now. Yeah, people are still making them. Eugene Jarvis, best known for Defender, Stargate, Robotron, Cruising USA, one of the real, true pioneers and innovators of the video arcade industry is still making arcade games with a company called Raw Thrills. So, yeah, there are still new arcade games being made, and there's a market for them. Getting back to what you were saying earlier, the freedom that we had didn't last because... The problem with the way Howie and Ron ran their department is that, you know, you had to have some hits. And luckily, they had Qbert, they had Mad Planets was a moderate success, and then Mach 3 was a huge success. That was a Laserdisc game. And so, you know, things were going great. But then they built up the department, and, you know, not everybody they hired was able to deliver the same way, that the other games did. And so... they found that they couldn't sustain that model, and then things got a little more tight.
So the people that they banked on, they asked more of? Is that what you're saying?
You know, it's not about asking from people. You know, you rely on people, certainly, and then, you know, the people you hire have to prove themselves by, you know, first of all, finishing the game, and then second of all, hopefully, finishing a game that will, you know, be a success.
Right.
So, they found early on, you could say they were lucky or they were shrewd. I don't know. But they found early on they had some successes, and that the company was built on that. But then, you know, when suddenly, part of it is that the market changed. So it's not entirely the fault of the people that were working there. The market changed, and you just couldn't put out, you know, just any game. You know, the market evolved, and you had to sort of put out something that was the right game for the right time, and a lot of that is chance. So I think just letting people do their thing and letting people go off in many different directions eventually couldn't sustain itself. And then they had to kind of tighten the ship, and, you know, people couldn't spend a year and a half floundering around trying to get a game working, which is something that did happen in the early days.
You know, once, like you say, you start to have a few hits, and then everybody else kind of jumps in the game, that you all of a sudden start to compete for space in these arcades. So you do have to put out your highest quality games, otherwise they're going to get yanked from the arcades. And I would imagine that a couple of disasters for a company like that, you know, after they've grown their business, is going to, you know, create some downsizing then.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the pinball industry was used to ups and downs, because historically the pinball business would go up and then it would have a downturn, and people would be sour on pinball machines for years, and then it would come back. So I think all the pinball companies were sort of poised to weather, you know, any storm that came. But the problem with the the market or with the industry itself is that, the early 1980s with everything, it was like a boom. You could just, everybody wanted more product. Arcades were springing up literally all over the country. So it was like, yeah, give me more games, give me more games, give me more games. But it reached a saturation point where, there were too many games and people weren't playing them anymore. People became, the players became a little bit more discerning. So a lot of the smaller companies that just sort of did little rip-off games or just sort of came out with something really quickly to make a buck, they're the ones probably failed first. But yeah, there was a kind of a video game crash in the arcade industry in about 1984.
Charles, when I was a kid, the only arcade that I knew of was the Dine-In Pizza Hut at the Lake of the Ozarks.
What?
And they
Did they have a sit-down Pac-Man machine?
They had a stand-up Pac-Man machine, and that was it. That was it. They just had that Pac-Man machine. Eventually, when I became a teenager, we used to go to Tilt at Mid Rivers Mall all the time, and they had Mortal Kombat and Revolution X, both of which Warren worked on. Now, Warren, you made like a software that made those games possible, and I'm a dumb guy, and I don't understand what it is that you made. Can you explain in like a dumb way what it is that you made that made the... It has something to do with video, Travis, and like they were able to make video into pictures that could go in the game. But I need Warren to explain.
You're doing a great job. You're doing a great job explaining it. No, So what I did was I basically created an art tool. It was a piece of software that used some video digitizing hardware. So basically what that allowed you to videotape something or grab a video image from a video camera and just, basically take a, individual frame and use it as a frame of animation in our video game system. You know how movies work. It's, or animation is, where somebody draws a cell and you play them back 24 frames a second and you have animation.
Is that how they made Mark Ruffalo the Incredible Hulk? Is it the same thing?
Yeah, that might have been a little more complicated because we're talking about the 2000s and now for me, I was living in the 1980s. So the technology was a little different. Basically it was just like cell animation, only we were doing that with digitized video of real people. I wrote that software.
Why are you not worth like billions and billions and billions of dollars then? If you made that,
that's not,
you should be, right?
That's not a question I'm able to answer. I've been asked it many times. If I had a dollar for every time somebody asked me that question, I'd probably be approaching that.
I remember Mortal Kombat as being the game that I said, "Oh, holy shit, Travis! They did it right."
Well, I think everybody did right. Like we had a water park, a handful of blocks from my house, and I spent a lot of time there. And I remember one day, one of my buddies actually worked there. I couldn't have been, 12. And I remember one day showing up at the water park and there's this giant crowd of people around one of the video games in the arcade that they had. And it's like, there was never a giant crowd around one of these cabinets. So it just didn't work like that. There was a handful of games that people liked and there was always people at them, but walking in there and getting in that crowd to see what they were playing and seeing that it was called Mortal Kombat and watching these people play this game, and every time somebody's punching, there's blood flying, and there's like, it looks like real actors in these weird landscapes and stuff, was mind-blowing at the time.
The guys who actually wrote the game, Ed Boon was the programmer, and John Tobias was the lead artist. So those two guys led that project, and the genius of what they did was to make those characters physically larger. So they took up a much bigger piece of the screen, and so you got a lot more detail, and the digitized, the faces of the actors were more visible, and everything about it was just more visible. And then of course they took it into this crazy you know, really bold, you know, graphically violent place, you know. So, but comically so, to their minds, I think, you know, I don't think they were trying to, you know, create any kind of a stir. I think they were just doing it because it was fun.
Yeah.
Warren, the book is called Creating Q-Bert and Other Classic Video Arcade Games. It's going to be in bookstores December 21st. Where should I send people? You just want me to send them to Amazon, Warren? Search for it on Amazon?
Well, it is available. It's available on Amazon. It's available on Barnes & Noble. It is probably available if you have a favorite independent bookseller. It's probably available to order on their website as well. So any place you'd like to order a book from, it should be available. And it's there's still pre-orders because it hasn't officially been released. But as you said, you know, we've got our fingers crossed. It's been delayed a couple of times already. It was supposed to be out originally in November. But, of course, COVID. Thank you, COVID.
Yeah.
Just things are delayed. So we've got our fingers crossed. It'll be available when we have announced it to be available, and just waiting and seeing.
So you're out of that business now, right, Warren? You don't tinker around with it anymore. You don't have anything that you're messing around with at home.
Well, I mean, I actually do some consulting work for Sony that's game related, but yeah, it's, you know, I mean, I always keep my finger in it. I don't know that I could leave it entirely, but I'm not deep into it right now. You know, I've played around with some virtual reality stuff in the past, and I've kept up to date on some of the new you know, game engines, Unreal and Unity. I still keep a little pinky toe in the industry, but not very much.
And if we're gonna let you go there, Warren, I'd be remiss to ask, did you see the movie Pixels?
I did.
What did you think about Q-Bert's appearance in that motion picture?
Well, you know, I'm always very gratified to see Q-Bert anywhere. There really was a long period where you just he felt like he was out of the public eye, and nobody's really doing anything with the character. So, you know, when he was in Wreck-It Ralph, I thought that was great, and when he was in Pixels, I thought that was great. I thought it was a you know, anything to keep the character alive. And, you know, the thing that's amazing to me, I go to a lot of these retro gaming shows, and I'm just really just stunned how many people still love the character. I just think he was not promoted in any way over the last few decades. So it's really his staying power comes from some magical place that I don't understand, but
and it is
very
true,
grateful for it.
Because I do want to tell you that Q-Bert was my 9 and 12 year olds' favorite part of that motion picture. That's their favorite character in the whole thing.
that's fantastic. Like a whole new generation. Well, yep. I'm hoping that Sony sort of sees the light. Sony owns the character and licensing. I'm hoping that they, you know, they do something with the character. I do think he can and should have a future.
Agreed.
Hey, hello, Q-Bert. How are you doing? So that's where you've been.
Warren, is there any place that they can that anybody can find you online? Are you on social media or anything like that?
Yeah, I've got a Twitter account at Warren Davis 29, I also have a public Facebook page, which is facebook.com/WarrenDavis29. So if people want to connect with me that way, that's fantastic.
Perfect. Thanks
a lot. All right. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Take care, Warren. Yeah. Whatever. Oh, that's right. That's the thing. He took a second option to make it work, and I, for one, appreciate that tenacity.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that people know about this, but my pick of the week this week is The Shield. I've started rewatching The Shield with old Vic Mackey and his unorthodox ways of policing in Los Angeles. And I got to tell you, tore through the first season in just a few days. So The Shield is my pick of the week. You bet, Michael Chiklis. He was actually, I knew him when that show came on from a little ABC show called The Commish. Very different character. Yeah, he was a police commissioner, but it was a completely tonally different show where it was like a, I don't even remember if it was a procedural really so much as it was like a lighthearted fair, and he was a family man, and it was a lot, it was much different than Vic Mackey. And I thought he was an amazing thing. You bet it is. You bet it is. Drunk, you see if you reach out, see if you can get us a promo code for the old Shinesty. Say, hey, Shinesty, old drunkard loves your ball sack underwear. Yes, you do. You do. Have you had the Shinesty? There you go. Hey, we're not advertising this shit for free. We can unlock this for as if you give us a promo code. Mike, you got a pick of the week this week? That's right. I want one. Okay. Join us for one more episode before we take our annual holiday break. If you want to join us live, do you have one more week? Yeah, A1. Pretty good one, I think, too.
Listening to this installment of WFOD, please subscribe and leave positive reviews on your preferred podcast player. Share the episode on social media or with one of your in-real-life friends. For links to our ever-expanding universe, including our Discord, our Twitch, and YouTube channels, and our library of back episodes, visit us at WFODshow.com. Thanks to Carl Casey at White Bat Audio for the music used in this podcast. Thanks to our Patreon sponsors, Amanda, Valerie, Brian, and Liquid. Visit patreon.com/WFODix to help support the show. Leave us a voicemail at 636-487-4263. Email us Mike or Travis at WFODix.com or reach out on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. We'll see you next week. Thank you. Goodbye.
Over.
Well,
Bye.